This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. Why do I still call myself that? Joining me in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur dipped, something our guest did and must have offended him. Speaking of our guests, a fellow HeadGum compatriot, I've been a big fan for a long time. We don't get to chat too much, and I'm very excited that you're on the pod.
I'm very excited that you invited me. I don't know if I should be talking, but
I don't care.
I made my own rules.
Yeah. Oh, that's fine. That'll be the first rule made on this podcast.
Okay.
Guys, that's Demi Adijuibe in
Nailed
there,
it.
Baby. Yes. Absolute panic. One last, you know, like that move when you're in a sketch and you're like, one last look at the script.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wrote it out phonetically. I'm like, don't fuck this up now.
But then you get that and you get like, you fuck up the next thing that you're supposed to remember that you thought you had.
That's what it always is. They're like, yeah, there's five more lines after the thing you've been stressing about.
Ooh. Well, I got hello, my name is, and then I'm done.
The more I work in this business, the more I realize the most basic skill sets that are important to success, I don't have.
I don't think I do either.
I'm like terrible at memorizing. I'm not good at like promoting myself. I'm not good at like a lot of the things that you're like, I don't even like, I never look and go like, I wish I was funny, and I could certainly be funnier, but I'm always just like, I wish I knew how to like put on clothes and look like a normal person.
I don't know how to sell myself or anything I've ever done. So a lot of times I'll put a lot of work into something and just throw it out and be like, that'll do.
That's a pretty concise explanation of what if I can label your brand of humor is like some of the stuff you do. I'm like, this is so fucking funny and so much effort. And I like nothing more than a lot of effort for like a sort of dumb thing.
Oh yeah.
That's like my favorite world, and like that's how I ended up becoming such a fan of yours. It's like,
thank you.
Any one of your tweets where you're like re-recording the new closing track of something, like all that shit just makes me so fucking happy. Like I love insane amount of efforts into like minor bullshit.
I've likened it to sort of like how if you have a dad that's like loves woodworking, he's always in the garage just making shit and he doesn't do anything with it, but he's like, the process of making it is very soothing to him. That's me with these videos and whatnot. And then I'm just like, well, I'm done, so I'll just
show it to other people.
Show it to
I guess.
Other people, yeah.
That's interesting. Is you get some juice off of just making them because it like
really
makes yourself laugh and you enjoy the process.
I really do. Like I think a lot of times when I'm writing like fake songs or whatnot, writing the lyrics, I'm like, this is fun. It just feels mathematic. Where I'm like, I just have to find something that rhymes or fits like the cadence. And then making the actual music is just like, I don't know. It's just like, it's this thing where I'm getting to do all of the skills that I learned as like a kid. And I'm just like, this is just taking me back to me being in my room through the summer being like, oh, what does After Effects do? Oh, it's this.
That's so fun. That's fucking cool. Yeah, that's something that I appreciate so much. And I think it's because at my heart, I'm like a lazy bastard. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, the things I'm the best at are like, so you're completely unprepared. You just sit down and start talking. And I'm like,
there's
yes.
value in that. Though.
Yeah. That's
absolutely
my success. I've made mediums amount of money doing that
Your
for a long time.
Built yeah. Built on unpreparedness.
I am a king podcast guest because I can fill time.
Yeah.
Will I put in effort? Will I listen to one episode of your pod before I come on? No promises.
But it's going to be funny that you didn't, and people are going to love it.
And I'm going to be okay with being completely out of pocket for an hour with strangers. But the thing we wanted, and also another thing based on, I've heard you on Blank Check. I've been following you on social media for a while. Big movie head.
Oh, big movie head.
And the kind of movie head I appreciate in which we are, you do not eschew blockbusters either.
No.
You enjoy
them. I love them.
Yeah.
I honestly think that it's like, I want to write and make movies one day, but I also am like, I want to write the kind of things that turn into blockbusters, but I want to do them on a smaller scale. Because I feel like now it's either like you have an indie where it's like the story of this kind of a person, or it's like a big movie about something blown up. And I'm like, is there a middle ground that I can work in? But
yeah.
I love all of it.
Me too. And you're describing the exact genre of movies I want to make. It's
right.
Like medium budget action movies.
Yes.
Where it's like those 90s action thrillers that I fucking
Absolutely.
Love so much, where it's like, we got Bruce Willis, we got a fan boat, and of course I'm talking about Striking Distance. I think, and we sort of talked about this over email, but I think at one point I realized that, do I like movies as much as I like, because I also see a lot of shit in theaters. Mm-hmm. Part of it is because I like to talk about movies immediately upon, like, so if other people have seen it, I'm mad that I can't be in the dialogue.
I get frustrated when it's like the weekend of a movie's release and I'm like out of town or like I can't see it. Then I'm like, I gotta get off Twitter. Someone's gonna spoil something for me.
That's what happened to me with Fallout. Most recent example was that I was like, I'm not gonna be able to see it till Monday night. Oof. And that was brutal. And that's 3 days after it came out. But to me, that was brutal.
It is brutal. I like the week a movie comes out, I will always just mute the title of the movie because I'm like, someone's gonna tweet something that they think is clever and is not really a spoiler, but then I'm gonna think about it for a week and realize what the spoiler is.
Yeah, I just did that for the first time ever with Insecure because I was gone this weekend.
Oh, I forgot
and
this.
I saw Natasha tweet something about it and I was like, oh, I can mute hashtag Insecure HBO. Yeah. Oh my God, thank God. And then I can still just look at Twitter on the plane. Yeah. Thank God.
You can't get away from it.
It was a 45-minute flight from San Francisco to LA. Could have just put it down.
No, you need it.
No, I need it.
What if something happens in that 45 minutes?
What if something happens not related to TV shows I'm waiting to watch?
Right. What if there's some sort of joke you got to jump on top of? And then it's 45 minutes and you come in with a joke someone made 30 minutes ago. You look like a fool.
What if I get that first funny reply to Corey Lewandowski or something?
There you go.
I'm just like in there resisting.
You get invited onto CNN to talk about your tweet that went viral where you just called him like Corey Poo-Ann Al-Ass-Key. And it's like,
you put the Shaka emoji as a response to him, and we love it, man.
Pretty good. You have a deal with Bacon Bits now?
We have no idea what it is, but we're excited to just finance you. Yeah, I've got a development deal with Bacon Bits.
Incredible. Wow.
But I realize part of it is I enjoy the process of going to the movies.
Yeah.
And I lived in New York City for a while after college and before I moved out here, and not a movie city.
New York City?
It seems like it is, but it's impossible to go to movies in New York.
I guess that's every time I go to New York, I do try to go to a movie and I just end up going to like an AMC way uptown or something.
Right. There's like some good, there's like one IMAX. There's, if you want to see blockbusters, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, there's not reserved seating. Solid chance you sit next to a homeless person.
Sure.
Like that happened at like when I went to see Shaolin Soccer. No, what's the not Shaolin Soccer? What was the Kung Pao Secret of the Fist?
Okay. Fist. Yeah. Oh yeah,
I saw that and I sat in between homeless people.
Like, are you sure that wasn't Steve Odenkirk, the star of the film?
You know, to be fair, it could have been.
Could have been
in another researching another role.
Yeah,
and also without. Like when I came to LA and I came to visit and someone's like, we're going to go to the Arclight. And that sentence sounded cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, cool. What is that? And then it's like, oh, do you like to sit in the front, the middle? And I'm like, you can pick your seats.
Yes.
There's not a better invention in the world.
I feel the thing about the Arclight is I love that you can pick the seats. I love that they are very stringent about like movie going, like practice and whatnot. And then I also, the one thing that I'm like iffy about is when you go into the dome and they have like the upper section and the lower section. I'm always like, I want a middle section between them because I'm like, I'm too close when I'm down there and I'm like, I'm too far back.
I want the front row of the second section if I can have it. That's my, we're going to talk about going to the movies because that is a underlying factor in seeing a lot of movies.
Sure.
Let's get right into it. Where's your favorite seat? If you have pick of the litter.
I am always like try to get as close to the middle as possible unless if I'm going alone, then I'll be like, as long as I'm not in the first three rows, I'm fine. But a lot of times I'm like, I just want to be far enough back that it feels like still enormous in my vision. But like depending on the movie, if it's like a blockbuster, I'll be like, no, I'm getting close to the middle as possible. But if it's like Call Me By Your Name, then I'm like, I don't want to be so far up that I'm like my neck hurts, but I can still be as far back as I need
to. Right, you can handle that. Yeah.
I went to see Game Night for the first time and I was worried because we got there late and we had to sit up super close. And I was like, well, this is going to suck. I'm not going to like this at all. And I loved it. And I went to see it again so quickly because I was like, all right, now what am I going to think of it? I see it further back.
When you said when I saw Game Night for the first time, I was like, what is that? What was that little predicate at the end there?
Oh, for the first time? Here's another thing about me that is very much me being a movie person. I see almost every movie twice.
In the theaters.
Yes.
Okay, so you now have surpassed me and most of my friends who I consider
I'm a crazy person.
That's insane to me.
But I
also appreciate it.
I don't feel like embarrassed about it until someone calls me out on it. Like, I just started a new job and at the job, I mentioned that I'd seen a movie twice and they're like, what? Why do you see movies twice? And then like 30 minutes later went by and one of the writers was like, what's the most you've seen a movie in theaters? And I like took a breath and I was just kind of like, okay, well, I'll say as of recently, last year I saw I, Tonya 7 times while it was still in theaters. Okay. And they were like, what? And like everyone crowded around was like, explain each time.
Because that is wild. Because that's not even the kind of movie I would guess you see seven times.
Yeah.
But is it like four times on purpose, three times it's like so-and-so's going, or it's a WGA screening?
So it's like, first of all, a little bit of a word trickery. I saw it four times in theaters, but while it was in theaters, I also got like a screener. And then whenever friends were like, I haven't seen that yet, I was like, come over. I've got it. Let's watch it all together.
Were you a... did you absolutely love the movie?
I love the movie so much, and I think it is in that like middle ground level where I'm like, this is a kind of movie that moves in a way where it's so easy to watch and it feels like a blockbuster, but it also is like a small story.
There's about, a little bit more going on.
Yes. So
it's been obviously compared to Goodfellas a bunch, but right. It does have that Scorsese thing where it's
better.
Like, well, okay.
I haven't seen Goodfellas in years though, so I'm not going to stand by that if anyone presses me. But yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Wow. When I went to see Fallout on a Monday with some friends, and I was mad that I hadn't seen it yet, five of the eight people I went with had seen it that weekend.
Really?
And we're seeing it again Monday, because we were seeing it in 4DX.
Yeah.
So they were okay with like the Switch.
Yeah.
But twice for most movies is very... Because comedies is even harder. Like, I couldn't imagine going back to seeing Game Night again.
The thing is, I went to see Game Night because I was like, well, it's not going to stand up. It was better. I liked it even more a second time.
Oh, because I didn't really love that movie. I was taken out of it the whole time by Bateman's age. By him being like, I hope I could be a good dad. I'm like, aren't you like... You're visibly 48.
Yes,
you're like,
true.
I'm not ready to settle down.
I think this might be the first time I thought about that aspect of it. Despite, yeah.
That took me out. But that's just like a minor... I thought it was fine. I think it's good.
Speaking of age and movies I've seen a lot, in I, Tonya, there are multiple times where they tell you the age of Margot Robbie, and you're just like, wait, what? Like, there's a line at the end where it's like, hey, you look young. She's like, I'm 23. I'm like, what, you are?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is weird. Only something you pick up on the seventh time.
That's why, yeah. It was the seventh time just making sure, and then I had to finish it.
Oh, that's... So, most movies you're seeing... movies, if you see them in the theater... What makes you want to see it again?
It's not a conscious choice to see it again all the time. A lot of times it is just like, I see a movie that I really liked and someone tells me they haven't seen it or they want to see it again. And I'm like, well, I want to experience that again, but I also want to see what this movie is like when I'm not just like trying to let the story unfold in my mind.
Right.
Where it's like, I know where it's going. Can I pick up on little things? Can I watch my friend enjoy it or like see if they hate it and have a discussion with them afterwards?
Yeah, being married, I've often seen movies in the theater twice for that reason, where I'm like, well, I got to take my wife to see this movie. It's so much better than I thought it was going to be.
And my friends are all my wife. So
I have a very complicated relationship with both cinema and my friends.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like a conscious decision where I'm always just like, well, I saw it once, I'll go again.
Right.
It's just like it happens a lot. And
that's so interesting.
I go to the movies like at least twice or three times a week.
Yeah, I'm going minimum once a week to the movies, sometimes more.
Yeah.
I would go more if it was any easier or any like if I could click and be like, hey Grove, can you play this movie at this time tomorrow?
Yes.
I would be going to the movies daily.
Because my office is attached to the Grove, there are so many times these past 3 weeks where I've just been like, yeah, I'll go to the Grove. Just walk over there and see a movie. And it's damaging.
Oh, the Grove is danger close to me.
Yes.
I can walk there. I enjoy going there. It's an easy drive home if you're still stoned from watching a movie. Like, I love the Arclight. That's my go-to theater for like movies I really want to see.
Yeah.
But the Grove is like proximity. And it's a Fandango theater, so it's easy to get tickets.
Yeah.
And for the last couple months, they've MoviePass.
MoviePass. Rest in peace, kind of.
So still makes beautiful sense for you.
Oh, yes. No, I'm still all
it's
aboard.
It's 3 a month, right?
I'm the person that is bankrupting them, because they're like, this motherfucker. Seven times for Itania. Come on.
Okay, you're only allowed to see some movies once.
And then I'm like, all right, fine. Well, I'm going to see all these fucking Indian movies in a theater downtown. Try and catch me.
When's the last time you did a double feature?
Ooh.
I haven't, like, that's such a thing of the past.
It used to be a thing where every Christmas when I was home, I would find a day where I'm not doing anything, go to the theater in the morning, and just see as many as I could in a row. The year that Girl with the Dragon Tattoo came out, I saw like 5 movies in a row on one day.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it was like, I think Dragon Tattoo was like the third one, and I was like, well, this was a weird choice. I got to go sit in like Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues Now or something. But,
yeah, right, like a 2.5 hour, like, traumatic telling in the middle of a day of movies.
I'm trying to remember the last, because there's definitely been a time this year, but there are also some times where I'll see a movie at home and then go to the theater.
That, entirely too often, I see a movie in the theater, and then, like, it's over at like 9:30 and we come home and my wife's like, oh, I'm going to go to bed. And I'm like, I'm going to watch a full nother movie.
Yes.
Full nother.
A full nother movie. A whole nother level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah. Another. That's not a word, though. It's usually a whole other movie, right?
Yeah. But I get what you're saying, and that's what's important to me.
Yeah. I'm speaking loose English, as we call it. So I've done that way too often.
Right.
I've watched at home, like if I'm killing time or if my wife's not around, like to like say we should do stuff, I could watch a full 2.5 hour action movie and then just like click, find look what else is on demand.
Yeah.
I'll watch Den of Thieves.
I feel like it's very hard for me to stay focused on a movie when I'm watching it at home nowadays.
I enjoy the movie part because it makes me pay attention.
Yes. Yeah. I enjoy the fact that it's like, I can't take my phone out right now. I have to focus on this. I can't pause it. But like when I'm home, I'm just like, yeah, I'll put something on Netflix and I'll put the subtitles on so I can like catch the last second of what happened and just like quickly read to make sure I didn't miss anything.
I find myself looking at my, like that's my barometer. Like with Action Boys, I can tell if this movie doesn't hold up for me. I'm trying hard not to look at my phone. And that's a bummer. So now I do a thing where I lay down on my big one couch and then throw my phone onto
that's
the other
smart.
Couch. And
I
then,
try to do that sometimes.
And it's like something I truly need to do.
Yeah.
But it's also being at home is like, you're like, I should be doing work or I should open up the laptop or like, oh, I'm hungry. Should I throw something in the oven? And like now you're doing more things than just the movie.
For some reason, like so before Mission Impossible came out, I was like, I'll watch as many of the old ones as I can before I go see it. And then I did a double feature of Rogue Nation and Mission Impossible. I literally was at work sitting there the day that it came out. And I was like, you know, work ended early. I'm going to watch Rogue Nation on FX right now on my laptop. And then I went to the Grove to go see Fallout.
Oh, that's pretty odd. That's a great move.
It's great. Yeah. I love doing that with sequels. I did it with Paddington 2 when that came out.
Still haven't seen Paddington 1, but I love Paddington 2.
Paddington 1 is like good. Paddington 2 is perfect. It's not, I can't understand how they're going to do a third.
I don't think they should. Like Paddington 2, they should wipe Paddington 1 from like the records and just call this movie Paddington.
Yes.
It's so, it's like Hugh Grant's best movie in
Absolutely.
20 years.
Yeah. I said that so confidently, I have a confession. I have never seen another Hugh Grant movie.
No?
Yeah. And I like measured this before Paddington came out and I was like, well, I'll see another one. By eventually, I have not still.
Oh,
it's just
shit.
Paddington.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. What is like, what's your history with movies? Were you like growing up watching a lot of movies? Did your family watch movies? Yeah.
So growing up, the movies that I watched were only movies that it's like, oh, this is playing at my daycare. So I saw like Grease a million times, Grease and Grease 2. I loved them. I saw half of the Neverending Story on a loop. I loved Gone Fishing with Danny Glover and Joe Pesci. I fucking love that movie. It's all these like weird picks that it's just like, it's just what they put on the VHS.
They put on like the least harmless, like four quadrant movie.
And I like, because of that, I didn't, like, my parents didn't introduce me to movies. My friends didn't really introduce me to movies. It was just like, I saw whatever was there. I didn't see Star Wars until I was an adult. And it wasn't until I went to college, I want to say, and I was in a town where people, like, went to see movies for fun. And it's like, I went to school for film. People were like, yeah, go see movies. Enjoy the movies around you. That I got really into going to the theater. And I think it was legitimately The Social Network was the experience where I was just kind of like, oh my God, I've been undervaluing movies.
Like the act of going to them or in general?
Well,
yeah.
Just all of it. But like the act of going to The Social Network was fun because I went to like a screening where they were like, it's for press. Here, take a shirt that says The Social Network on it. And I was like, the Facebook movie? We'll see how this is. And then I was blown away and like obsessed with that movie for weeks. I saw it so many times when it officially came out that I was just like, what other movies have I been missing?
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, I think clearly now you're younger than me, is my guess.
I'm 12.
But that's fucking wild. Like it's always really funny when, because you hear people in like press or, you know, EPKs or whatever talking about like, well, when I first saw Godfather, it cracked me wide open. And it's really funny, like for different generations, like just like, maybe The Social Network isn't the best movie, but it's a great movie.
It's incredible.
And if you're the certain age and it's a movie full of, because it's a Fincher movie, it's full of choices at least, you know, like where, and you fucking see that and you're like, this, and everyone will have, you know, Paddington 2 was that for someone, Fallout was that for someone.
I think about that a lot in terms of like, everyone says The Godfather, everyone says these movies that are like grandfathered in as classics. And now I'm just like, what is going to be the next set of movies where it's like, well, people are getting a little bit older, like you said, what is going to become a thing where people will say and we won't laugh? Like, if this is The Social Network big enough that it's like, yes, it makes sense for people to get into that. Or is it going to be like Like when someone says Inception, I feel like it's very easy for people to make fun of people who love Inception, like any Nolan film. But now, right. I'm like,
I think Nolan and Fincher suffer from sort of like
film bros.
Exactly, where it's like the type of dude whose favorite movie is Fight Club and Dark Knight.
Exactly.
You're kind of like, yes, those are good movies, but like they're not the best movie. Right. But they, it's all subjective, obviously, yeah. But it's one of those things where it's like when someone says like that, you can kind of. But I'm also the same dude who's like, my favorite comedy is Step Brothers. So right. It's like, who am I? I'm a comedy snob, and Step Brothers is my favorite movie. So like, what the fuck? And I like Wes Anderson.
Yeah, no, I love it all, but I don't know. I think I blame the IMDb top like 250, where it's just, there are some movies where it's this, the people, like the posters college kids have on their walls.
Right.
The things where it's like, this one was cool. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with Boondock Saints, Scarface. There's nothing wrong with getting into movies that way. But I do sort of have like a predilection to be like, I know what this kind of person this is.
Right. Right. And that's a new thing, right? Fandom ruining the product.
Yes.
For other people. Like, because like comic books, all shit I grew up on, comic books, Marvel, Disney, video games, Star Wars,
right.
Are now have this weird kind of fandom that is like off-putting.
It's, I think it's
even
because,
podcasts, no offense.
No, they do. I think it's because they're getting so big that there are these niche things that people used to bond with and now they feel a sense of ownership over it. But it's like, well, yeah, these are good. Everyone loves them. They're like, well, no, I love them the way I'm supposed to. So if every other person likes it because it's different, then it's wrong now. It's not for me anymore. And that's bad.
The joke you make on Action Boys is like, I'm a geek. I like the movie that's been number one for 9 months.
Yes, exactly. It's like, my favorite movies are Infinity War and all of the Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. I'm just a geek. I like the thing that's wildly successful and comes out 3 times a year.
Yeah. But it's like, who are the new geeks now that those are so big? Like,
yeah, I wonder. There's got to be a backlash to like the blockbusterification of movies, right?
I think there will but it won't come for a while.
No, it won't come for a while because I think Netflix is thinking they're doing that with like a bunch of like medium budget movies coming directly to streaming, but it's not the same.
No.
And I know people who'd prefer to watch movies at home. I get that because that's like some homebody shit. You get your own snacks, you get your own couch or whatever, your own out, you could wear whatever you want. But that's why Netflix movies suffer, because like I think because that's where people watch them, so they don't put the fucking big screen care into them.
It's the new straight to DVD. It's just kind of like, if you stumble upon it and you think, yeah, I might watch this, you will watch it. But I don't think anyone comes out of a Netflix movie going like, that was transcendent. Like,
right.
You just like it.
Because if it was that good, would assume it could blow up or something like that. But I feel like there's going to be, in my head, this is wishful thinking, I dream of like a generation that we don't know about yet. Maybe they're all 10 now, who sort of like forego social media and phones and are sort of like, oh, that's like the stupid shit my parents did.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to be connected. Like, I imagine in my head, and this again, wishful thinking, like a generation of kids of New Yorkers and Californians who are like, we like camping and sports, you know, like they like swing the other way out of rebellion. And I think like take the pressure off of phones and social media and shit. Like, that's my dream. So I'm hoping some filmmakers coming up are like, I want to do practical effect horror movies. I want to make action movies with squibs and cars exploding.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that I'm like, if I ever get the chance to make anything, I'm like, no, I'm not, I don't give a fuck about social media. I don't want it to interact with the story. I'm just like, how do I make this a practical thing that feels like a real, like, timeless event that you're not just going like, oh, Tumblr in the middle of it. And it's like, oh, I know when this was made.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah. And like watching old movies, and like they have such a weird vibe to them sometimes that I don't think that gets like rolled out of movies or like chopped out of movies now, where it's like a Scorsese movie feels like all of them feel like Scorsese movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now we're like, Ragnarok's a real Taika movie. And it's like, that's a weird, like,
it's such a low bar that it's like, it's green.
Yeah.
It's original. Yeah. And it's like, it is sort of, it's like,
it's original amongst Marvel movies.
It's as much of an auteur as you can be when you were making a $100 million movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And no one thinks that Marvel is the place to flex those muscles, obviously. But yeah, it is one of those things where it's like, all movies are building. And that's what Fallout is, a big budget blockbuster with a bunch of set pieces, you know, minimal story, good story, whatever. But the fact that it's like the practical effects and minimal, like, VFX makes that movie It blew past Fast and the Furious, which I was holding on to as my like Marvel Star Wars antidote for a long time, where I'm like, at least I have the Fast movies, which I still really love.
I still do too. I like every time a Fast and Furious movie comes out, I avoid the trailers and then just get like, I like lean forward in my seat when a cool action sequence happens.
It's great. They're Marvel movies starring humans, and absolutely. It's like so fun.
Yeah.
And I think Mission Impossible has become that too in a way where I'm like, why are they way more tolerable? Is it like the human component of it? Like
it's because you can feel the realness of it and feel like the sense of danger, even though it's like...
If it is a supercar driving from one tower in Dubai to another.
And it's like, I think a lot of it is editing, and I think a lot of it is the way that it's shot, because like, I mean, minor spoilers for Fallout, but it's like in the new one, there's a skydiving sequence that's all one take, and you feel the fact that it's like the camera's not moving away from him. You're like, this is a real... Tom Cruise was in the sky, and you feel the effects of like how dangerous that he's, even though it's like 20 minutes into the movie, and you're like, he'll be fine, but still.
Right, but there is that element of like, wow, weird, it is his face. Like, and that's a movie I want to rewatch, you know? I've been talking about this on like anything that I've spoken on in the last two. That's the problem with doing a lot of podcasts and guesting on other people's is like the week I saw Fallout, I brought it up like 9 times. Mm-hmm. So now if they all come out at different times, people are going to be like, what the this dude has been talking about this for 6 months.
I think a lot about any time, like anyone, if anyone's like, oh, I like Demi, I'll listen to this thing he's on. They're just going to hear me talk about like 4 movies always, like for like a year, even when the joke is like, I'm just talking about how I always talk about this movie. And I'm like, right, well, it comes up again, movies.
And it never goes away. It's like, yeah. This fucking guy in I, Tonya.
It's like, yeah, but now I'm just talking about how I watch I, Tonya all the time.
I'm not talking about I, Tonya. I'm talking about how many times I've watched I, Tonya.
But I will if you want me to, if we're here.
I watched like a 25-minute BTS, like just put together of all behind-the-scenes shit of Tom Cruise on the set. And it's some scenes have audio, some are MOS. It's very shoddy. It's not put together by Mission Impossible or anything. Yeah. It's like by a fan or whatever. But I'm obsessed with it. I watched it twice.
It is so funny you say this because there's a part of me that's like, I watch so many BTS things. I'm like, I think I know the YouTube channel you're talking about.
Yeah.
But like,
I forget, they're like called like FlixPix or some shit.
There's like this one guy whose name is like Amras Talaram or something where it's like, it's just like his channel is just compilations of B-roll, and I watch them all because I'm like, how do they do that? Or like, what does it look like to be on set for this?
I really enjoyed it. And I know, and I watched, and it's the highlight for me is Tom Cruise talking with the producers about the stunts.
Yeah.
And it is the most alpha, like, no matter what you want to say about Tom Cruise, he's a polarizing figure.
Right.
But the dude is literally like, so that's, he's talking with like directors, helicopter pilots, cameramen. He's like, I need you to come in real tight. And I'll know. I'll bank left when I have to bank left. And I'll know. Don't worry about that. And like, there's this, he's talking about the sequence where he, again, minor spoilers for Fallout, falls from the chopper, but he's on like the thing.
Yeah.
And his face is in frame. He's like, did you like, and he's talking to Macquarie. He's like, did you like when I got up there and looked at it? And Macquarie's like, your face looked great. He's like, I'm going to fall this time and this way. And Macquarie's like, I'll try to get your face. And Tom's like, I'll make sure it's there. Like, and it was just the most cool, like, he's like, so when I fall from the chopper and I'm holding on to just the rope and drop 25 feet and catch myself,
yeah,
I'll make sure my face is presented correctly for camera.
It's he's directing himself and just telling everyone, it's like, just fucking roll. Like, I got this. Yeah. It's insane.
And you would say, like, if you heard that about any movie you worked on, and you'd be like, this person's an asshole. But it might make sense.
It makes perfect sense because there aren't Tom Cruise movies where you're like, well, he should have just let it the directors do it.
Right, yeah. Right. And he is a machine. Like, you bring Tom Cruise on, he's gonna do his thing.
Do you think he'll ever just direct a movie himself? Because there was a time where he was known as like the guy who watches everything, and now I feel like he doesn't talk about it as much in press. But
right.
Like,
well, there's like famously movies. That thing went viral recently where it was like,
oh, where he's just not talking about movies. Like, yeah, he's, just,
and
oh,
he's like, the sound, the videos. I love the music and the noise.
Where he was like, what's your favorite movie? He's like, wow, movie. You know, I just love all of them and everything about them.
It was like a Robin Williams riff. movie, groovy, dude. You know, you're like, oh, okay. We're not talking about anything, are we?
Just pick one. Pick Coco. What do you want?
Say a movie, Tom. Say one of your own movies.
But one of my movies. There's so many. It was in Mission Impossible and Top Gun.
Mission Impossible 2. He just goes through all the Mission Impossible
Days of Thunder.
Is he also a sign that Scientology works?
I
like,
is ever it, since Mission Impossible 6 came out, I have been getting into conversations where I accidentally defend Scientology, and then I just quickly have to stop myself and be like, look, I'm not saying it's good, they did bad things, but he...
And it's, I'm just like I don't want to get into this.
And but, or is it like his disillusionment that he has to be representative of what Scientologists are capable of?
That's what it is.
So it's like... He's got this weird confidence because he believes whatever he actually believes, right, or whatever he acts, but he gets some sort of juice off Scientology, and then he's like, risks his life for us.
I feel like he loves being the person that he is so much that he's just kind of like, I think he also just loves the adrenaline. He loves doing stunts. And I feel like if I were a movie star, I would always be like, can I do the stunts? I feel like it'll be fun. Like, I'll get punched. It'll heal in very quickly or whatever.
He's got to that level of success and money that rich people get to where, like, we always joke about, like, Harrison Ford flies planes, you know, yeah, all these people collect cars, do this. Tom Cruise is like that level of rich where it's like, can I live forever? What can I physically do? Like, I got to go shoot Fallout. I want to learn how to fly a chopper, yes, too. Do you think I could like learn to fly a chopper and make sure that that's in Fallout?
I feel like he's living out that Jim Carrey movie, Yes Man, where he's just kind of like, if I can do it, I will do it.
Right.
But just with movies.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, like, you see it in a lot of movies where it's just like, oh, this is four friends shooting a movie in Hawaii.
Yeah.
What couples retreat with, like, where it's like, this is a terrible movie with eight actors that we all know are friends in real life.
This is a vacation.
Yeah, they went on a vacation. So I think some people pick movies like that where they're like, oh, it'd be fun to be in Australia with my wife and family. But then I think some, like Tom Cruise is like, I want to be able to drive my motorcycle in a movie. And he picks movies based on that. And, yeah, and he like, is like Neo in that he's like, all right, in this next movie, I do a halo jump, motorcycle thing, helicopter thing, and rappelling thing. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to learn those four skills the way a special forces soldier would learn
that. It's insane. He was on our show he was on a Late Late Show to do a segment with James Corden where he jumped out of a plane.
Great fucking bit.
But also, it's like, there's no sense of nerve on his... He's just like, yeah, what? I'll jump out of a plane. I did it 106 times for a movie. I can do it twice for this taped bit.
Yeah. And Stanger, when Stanger was over, he was talking about, like, the coolest thing about it is, like, you can see that James is visibly nervous, mm-hmm, and you can see that Tom is in jeans and a t-shirt, right, kind of like, yeah, let's go.
He's kind of like, should we do a bit here? It's like, I can't do a bit. Okay, well, then we won't do a bit. But, like, I feel like Scientology also just gives him, like... He wants to see if, like, what things are possible. So he's like, I think he loves, like, the methodical sense of any stunt where it's like, if I can do the moves correctly, I can do anything.
Right.
If he's like, it's like, can I dance? Great. If I know the steps to this stunt, I can do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it is like a push yourself type of thing where, and I think he's at that level of success and money and he's a little older where he's like, I have to keep myself in tip top shape. And he's probably doing, you know, like rich people sometimes eventually do the high end party drugs, mm-hmm, or they do the high end like life increasing drugs where I feel like Tom Cruise is being dipped into some sort of serum every night.
He's,
you know,
he's like doing that thing where you flatline.
And every, it's like, you technically knock a year off your life if you flatline. He's like, on it.
He's like, I have been out for a year now. Bring me back.
Yeah, he like lowers his body temperature every night so it doesn't count towards his life cycle or some shit.
He's
like
basically
that.
Like, can I be a vampire? Let's see.
And which I'm fucking into.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would do with, it's like, it's the celebrity version of being Bruce Wayne, right?
Yes.
Where you're like, oh, I'm a millionaire. What should I do? How about I clean up the streets? It's like, or I can make a movie and learn all the same Bruce Wayne
no
skills.
No one benefits from it, like physically or socially, but we all smile and that's enough.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
I was saying earlier, like, how is Scientology so good for Tom Cruise and so bad for John Travolta? Right. And I don't know how it's like, one of them is in one of the biggest movies of the year and the other one's got like Gotti, right, and Battlefield Earth. They're two big movies.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what happened?
I have no idea.
It's weird because they really do have sort of similar like lore around the two of them as well, where they're sort of like came up as like, oh, they're young, hot guys. Oh, actually, they have some chops. Oh, they're sort of out of it for a while. Oh, they're back into the mainstream, but never like Travolta has been chasing Tom Cruise's fucking.
I feel like it's because Tom Cruise was just like, I'm just going to keep doing cool stunt things. And people will be like, oh, he can act, but we really like the fact that he's the only one who does these stunts like this.
Right.
Whereas Travolta was like, I'm going to keep trying to act in like serious action movies while also trying to it feels like he wants to be a person that he's not, like, in his own life,
right?
And not, well, like,
I think there's like some obvious jokes to make you can make there,
which I'm like, I feel bad making the like, oh, is he gay joke, and I won't, but I also like genuinely feel like sometimes, like, when I see a new picture of him, I'm just like, have you changed something that you are, like, unhappy with? You're trying to embrace that while also being like, I'm still the guy from 20 years ago. Remember
well, like,
me
also,
way.
The roles Travolta chooses are always like, this guy has a flavor saver, an eye patch, and he's bald. It's like, this guy has two earrings, purple-tinted sunglasses, and a mohawk. You're like, what are you doing?
I have no idea what
and Tom Cruise picks Ethan Hunt, who's like, is he 25, 55? Who cares? He's handsome.
His diversity of roles for Tom Cruise is just a haircut, and even then sometimes it's like, you know what, I'm not gonna do the haircut this time, and that's fine.
That is sort of what Tom Cruise is a good actor. He hasn't chosen a bad movie in a while either.
I'm trying to think of the last movie where I was like, this was a bad move for him. And I didn't see Rock of Ages, but it might be that.
Oh, yeah. But that also can be brushed away as like kitschy and fun. Like, that's one of those roles where it's like no one is giving up shit to anyone in Mamma Mia.
Right, exactly.
Because it's like, this is a fun romp, whatever. And School of Ages is a different
school
job.
School of Ages. It's just called school.
It's a school of ages. We divide them up by their age. That's how school works. All right. Well, my idea is shit.
No, write it out.
School of Ages. Rock of Ages is corny and bad. But it is at the same time where it's like he gets away with it. Reacher 2 was garbage. And I loved Jack Reacher.
I love Jack Reacher. But my only complaint with Jack Reacher is he's never any trouble comes to him. Like, he's never in like, I'm down and out and I need some help. It's like, he's fine the entire time. That's still great.
Doesn't even happen in Mission Impossible Fallout ever.
Not really.
He's like almost never. The only thing, he's just always wrong about like who the real bad guy is.
Yeah.
But he's never like, how am I going to get out of this?
Exactly.
Because he's fucking Ethan Hunt.
Yeah. And they like have that line at the end of Rogue Nation where it's like, he's the manifestation of destiny. And I love that line because it is just them going like, he's never going to die. Get over it. Like, you know what you're watching.
Right. Yeah. And they like just give all the heavy lifting to Alec Baldwin to be like, just say how insane and amazing he is.
Right.
And it could be talking about Tom Cruise.
But what was I just about to say? Oh, with Rock of Ages, I also feel like that's a movie where I get why he did it, because dancing is choreography, like stunts.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted to try and see, like, can I be physical in this way? I feel like it's another checkbox for
him. And and it's music, and he's like, I can learn to play the guitar. I can practice. He has, like, that weird drive, and I don't know what came first, you know, Scientology or this drive, or if he's a very ambitious guy, and Scientology seems to help ambitious people more.
Yeah, Or take advantage of.
It's parasitic, but he's benefiting in some way.
Yes.
But Rock of Ages feels like, he's like, maybe I'll learn to sing, and, you know, the thing I heard was that to learn to do that halo jump is a 16-week course.
Really?
Or it's like a 12-week course if you do 8-hour days, and that he did 16-hour days with two different units, like eight hours with one, and then another shift with a different, to like cut the time in half.
Of course he did.
Of course. And who knows how much like money is being involved, where it's like, look, we can skip a week because you're Tom Cruise. Like,
I feel like he approaches stunts the way that I approach like downloading music, where I'm just like, what's the quickest fucking way I can get it? Like,
or getting food. Yeah.
And he's just like, no, I want to learn this stunt by tomorrow if I can.
Yes, the Rock of Ages makes me think he's like, I'll learn 20 songs on guitar tonight, you know, and prove everyone. Live, Die, Repeat was fucking awesome.
So good. Such a surprise of a good movie, too.
Yeah. He hasn't done a bad one in a while. That's his strong suit.
Yeah.
I couldn't even tell you. Jack Reacher 2 is not enjoyable, but it's still a sequel to a property, so it's
Did you see American Made?
Oh, okay, yes.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that is.
Oh, no.
But it's not, again, it's not even, he's, He's value added in everything. Right. You know what I mean? Like, American Made is watchable because it's Tom Cruise in the
lead. Didn't he also first learn to fly a helicopter for that movie?
I bet. I mean, he's flying a small craft in it, so I'm assuming he's really doing it.
Of course.
Also, and this is maybe offensive to one of two parties, but he has a certain look in that movie that makes him look slightly more feminine. Like, with his shirt choices and sunglasses choice.
Yeah.
And he looks like Tig Notaro.
I was going to say, Tig Notaro was on the show this week, and she says she only gets mistaken for Tom Cruise.
I believe it.
I mean,
in American Made especially, he sort of at one point has, like, a sort of looser fit men's cut shirt that is a little bit effeminate, because it's like an 80s style.
Right.
And it looks like something you could see Tig wearing.
Absolutely.
And it was like, oh, my God. And he has, like, weird sunglasses. Like, he's like, older woman sunglasses in that movie.
The haircut is
It's a very similar haircut. But that maybe was, that was not a great movie.
I'm bummed that I didn't see it, because I was very excited to see it for the entire time it was in theaters, and I just never got around to it.
See, what happens to me too, another reason why I like to see movies like opening week is a few of my friends will see it, and they'll start kind of bad mouthing it, and I'll be like, well, now I'm not going to kill myself to see American Made.
I want to be the person who drives. I'm like, go see this movie, it's great. Or like, I didn't like this movie very much.
Yeah. People, I used to get made fun of because I like movies all the time. You know what I mean? People are like, do you just like everything? I'm like, well, they're like, were you high? I'm like, yeah. as Jeff Rubin one time said, were you high? Yeah, it was a movie.
Right.
I went to the movies.
Do you think that getting high like changes your opinion of a movie ever?
I think it allows you, it sort of rounds off mistakes. And I think it does the same thing with like food and music and shit, where you're like, this is one notch less boring, one notch more interesting because of pot. If I've gotten high and seen terrible movies, you know, where I'm like, oh, that was not even worth it.
Yeah.
Getting high really makes rewatches enjoyable, because you're like, I don't even remember this set piece.
I love getting high on a rewatch. It stresses me out sometimes for a first watch, especially if it's like a horror movie or something where crazy shit is happening.
Oh,
I went to see Logan high, and there's just so much violence and like visceral, like a child getting just like shish kebab, and I was like, no, oh my god, and it was just like too much.
Did you enjoy Logan when you?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
I really liked it.
And may I pitch why I think it was so cool?
Why?
It was an R-rated action movie.
Yes, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked for me. The fact that it was R-rated, and they were like, yeah, we're going to embrace death the way it happens. We're going to embrace the fact that how depressing it is to be Wolverine. I was like, good.
Yeah. It's a movie about a dude who has claws for hands who kills people. It's like, maybe we should see some claws.
It is weird that it took this long.
Right. The fight sequence in the parking lot with those like random guys that fuck with them, I was like, that comes out like kind of early in the movie, and you're like,
I think it's the first scene. Yeah.
And you see tits.
You
show a flash of boobs, and you're like, holy shit, when's the last time you saw boobs and an X-Men in the same movie?
Hugh Jackman and boobs? It's everything.
He's never even seen
another stuff. He sees it in the rear view and is like, that's enough for me.
I'm good. I'm the greatest showman after all. I wish there were more R-rated movies. But now we're sort of like, and we talk about this I talk about this a lot, so forgive listeners, but I want to talk this about you. There is that like globalization of movies, which is not a bad thing per se, because then they're pumping more money into them, trying to go bigger. But then it's like you're having foreign actors, or you would leave something out of the movie because it might offend a whole nother nation, or it might be convoluted for them to understand.
Which is why it took so long to get any R-rated movie.
Right, that's the other thing. And to keep them all PG-13 so you can just sell it to more people.
And I do dislike it, but I also feel like you don't need a movie to be R for it to be good. There are so many great movies that are just PG-13.
Right.
But it does feel like, especially with Marvel and like any Disney thing, they are specifically going for like, what is the broadest reach we can get? And still, I think the fact that they make so many movies that do still work to me within that parameter, I'm like, that's impressive.
No, yeah. But they're doing is, I'm getting fatigue of Marvel movies, but it's not their fault. The product is coming out, and the product is never below B minus. In 5 years, it hasn't been below B minus.
I think. Well, I don't. I'm not a big fan of Guardians.
Okay, Guardians 2 bored the shit out of me. And I'm a diehard Kurt Russell fan. I would have been 100% into it.
Yeah.
Guardians 1, I enjoyed. Guardians 2, lesser. But I think it's crazy because you know what it is. Guardians leans on comedy a little bit much, and these movies aren't a hunt. Like it has like
the comedy is never the thing that you're like, this is what I love about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The fact that an ex-wrestler who's painted like green and red has the most comedy in the movie
is so funny.
He's the best part.
Yes. He and Mantis are my two favorite characters, I think, in the Marvel. Well, not of the, I think they're like top five.
Yeah. But yeah. That's fair. That's them. The way to do that.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to make any declarative statements. I already disagree with
Mantis
myself.
Is my favorite. This is my hill to die on.
DC Pearson's character in Winter Soldier is number one.
I just recently saw on Twitter that was going around, what happened to this guy when the snap went off? And DC retweeted it with thriving, and that's blowing up. That's,
yeah.
I saw Winter Soldier in the theaters in Arizona with Ben Rogers on the drive to a wedding, and neither of us knew DC was in the movie.
Really?
And he maybe knew, but didn't tell me, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
And when DC popped up, we cheered. We're two people cheering for an Apple Store employee in a movie. People are like, what?
That's so exciting.
Everyone cheers when characters get big reveals later, and we're hyped for the Apple Store employee.
I mean, I would be too. My ex told a story about how her sister was in Bring It On in like a very small role, and they didn't know if she was even going to be like cut from the movie. And then there's one scene where it's like she's center frame, like she gets a line and it's not cut. They had told enough people in the theater that the entire theater went nuts more for that than for anything.
That's so fun. Love that. That's a very new to me experience being in LA, is a few times I've been in a movie opening weekend and a small group of people cheer at a very specific moment.
Or like the credits, and you're the credits, someone here worked post.
Yeah, when like the director of photography, and you hear like four people go, woo woo, and you're like, oh, I guess that's Janusz Kaminski's family.
I also really love the like fervor of an opening night crowd. Like, even though I am like leveling out on Marvel movies, like going to see Infinity War and having people cheer like every 5 minutes, I was like, this is definitely raising it for me. It made me like it more.
Seeing The Force Awakens on opening night was a fucking wonderful experience. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But I was like, enjoyed the experience of being like, when the fucking music starts and the movie starts, I was like, I'm shitting a fucking, I can't believe I'm 35 and seeing this in the theaters like this.
So I told you that I had not seen Star Wars until I was an adult. The reason the first time I saw Star Wars was because I got invited to go to the Force Awakens premiere. And I was like, if my coworkers find out that I'm going to this and I haven't seen the movies, they're going to hate me. So I was like, I'll just watch the trilogy. And I did. And I went to the premiere and I was like, I think I might enjoy this. And I was just like, oh, I love this. This is so fun. And like the new generation of Star Wars that like all the old fans are like, I don't know if this is for me, or like they're ruining it. I'm like, this is my Star Wars now.
Well, for you, That's so, I mean, I always wonder about that, because like, I feel like a lot of the people who hate the new Star Wars, first of all, we all need to just go in agreement on the internet and say like, guys, Marvel and Star Wars are for children.
Oh, no, they absolutely are.
And it's okay if you enjoy it.
It's not an insult to say that. I think a lot of people are just like, no, fuck you. I'm an adult. It's for me. It's like, it's for everyone. Because it's for everyone, it is for children.
Right, and children are included.
Yes.
So it's not going to be as edgy and as terrifying or as like, it's not even going to be as weird as those original Star Wars were allowed to be, because it was like so...
Because they didn't know what the fuck it was going to be.
Right, exactly. Now it's like, it's... Disney and is the biggest, one of the biggest corporations in the world making these movies.
Yes.
So, I've said this on a few Disney, if you told me when I was 12 that Star Wars and Marvel were going to be owned by Disney, I would be mad, because I would be my classic little heteronormative misogynistic self, where I'm like, fucking Jasmine's going to be in fucking Marvel now.
Right.
I don't know what we're going to get. And now I'm like, oh, that is what kind of happened. Yeah, not the Jasmine part. But
right. But also... And I, every time I say this opinion, I specify that I hate to give credit to like a big, like the giant corporation, where I'm like, we should acknowledge that them having a monopoly on this industry is fucked up, and I don't like that at all. But also, they do pretty well with what they are trying to do with these big, like billion-dollar franchises.
I was literally about to jump on and say the same thing. It's like, say what you will about Disney.
Yes.
Marvel is like an exciting thing that, like, cross movie continuity, like, who would have thought that part of comics would travel this far?
Right.
Where it was like, now it's like people are seeing movies the way you used to read comics. It's like, now, faithful reader, don't forget to read Fantastic Four 1-8 before catching up on what's the thing has been up to. And it's like, better see Ant-Man and the Wasp you know what's going on in other.
I feel bad for all the people who are like, I just want to see this one. I don't care about the whole thing. But then I also am just kind of like, but it is exciting to like see all of them and just sort of get the full picture. And just to know how many people, it's like, these movies are so big that you go see one of these movies, even like 2 weeks after it's been out, no one leaves when it's done. You sit through the credits. Everyone is there for the entire credits just to see one fucking scene at the end. That, I think that is so special.
Yeah. I swear to God, if Disney or and Marvel did anything right, they make people watch the credits of a movie.
I
think at
that's,
minimum, that's what they and yes. For, and what I like about it, and I'm sure you do too, because based on your, then you have 5 minutes of post movie chat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, where you're
sitting
like
there, you, everyone's like talking
as they just list animators and visual effects people.
You get
those
someone,
people whose names are so small because it's like 1,000 people.
Yeah, when they get down to like the VFX artists, and it's just like there's no way I'm gonna see any of these people's names. But like one person cheers and you're just like, oh hey, that's so nice for you.
Yeah, I'm glad.
You did a great job.
And you could turn to the people you're with and be like, that was pretty fucking cool, huh? Yeah. Oh man, that was funnier than I thought it was.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pleasant. Although it's like, I still feel like overall with Marvel, I think Infinity War was the line for me where I'm just kind of like, I'll watch them, but I don't think that these are as big to me as they were before.
Same here. And I can't tell if it's because they come out so frequently or if it's because of actual content.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like, are we tiring of it or are they tiring of it? My big thing is like the second part of Infinity War, I don't know if I'm going to want to see Marvel movies after that. This feels like such a natural ending.
I cannot, because they have not had a point where it's like this signifies an ending. Like they had the Avengers, but it was like, no, we know there's more after this. The second part of Infinity War feels like this is going to be like a wrap up of so much that I'm just like, how do you even wrap that up?
Yeah. What is the
what
next
does that
level?
Look
yeah,
like?
Because yeah. you got to make another Black Panther.
You got to make another Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which is also why I hated Infinity Wars, because I came out being like, but I know that you're going to bring them back. I don't feel the emotion of this. I'm sorry.
That's really funny you say that, because that's a holdover from comics. That's what made me actually stop liking comic books once I got a little older. I was diehard, road to the comic book depot on Jerusalem Avenue every week. Then I stopped liking it because there is no stakes with like, especially like, they rebooted the universe. Then it's like, actually, Iron Man was a clone the whole time. He's fine. Oh, who killed Captain America? He killed Captain America on Earth Prime. This. Or, oh, we can go back in time and reset. We can do that. And so it like kind of lost all the stakes.
Yeah.
And that was what kind of ruined comic books for me. And now it's obviously going to happen in the movie.
Yeah. It's just, I feel like, at least with the Avengers franchise, they haven't done it yet. So when it happened, I was just like, oh, you're doing this now with the biggest movie you've done? Okay.
Yeah, and it's like, we know they're going to come back.
Yeah.
We know.
I know the second movie is just going to undo it, and the people who were alive, it's like, well, I have to sacrifice myself. So I'm like, okay, let's do this. another 2.5 hours.
I know. And I'm looking forward to, you know, theory on the fly here.
Mm.
Marvel movies, I'm getting bored by them, but I think, because I like the movie-going experience, which what this episode is about, these Marvel movies allow you to be like, well, quarterly, I've got a tentpole thing that people are going to go see and people are going to talk about, and it'll feed into the next movie, and I'll learn more each time. And it's like, that's like doing your home. That's like me watching, like, do I have to watch The Fire Walk With Me to really like Twin Peaks?
Right.
And you're like, the old completist comic book nerd in me, I'm like, I'll go see Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know?
I really do think that because they're the, like, I know like, people shit on superhero movies because everyone likes them because they're dumb, but it's like, because everyone likes them and because they're dumb is why you have those opening night crowds where everyone is excited and just living in it, and like, we all are like, we know it's stupid, but we're having fun. Like, I went to see Black Panther with my fucking 50-year-old Nigerian mom, and she loved it.
Oh!
And it was so special.
I couldn't even wrap my head around, I didn't even think of that.
Right.
That you're bringing African people.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, people who don't go see movies or like don't really give a shit about this kind of movie are excited about it. My mom left the theater being like, oh, I'm telling your dad about it. He's going to love this. And I'm like, yeah, I can go to the movies with my mom. And she doesn't have to go see all the other ones because that one is self-contained. And
right.
A lot of them stand on their own. But I just think it's such a special thing. And like, for me to shit on it, I'm like, no, blockbusters are great because they're designed. They're the great equalizer. Like, I love that.
And you know, the reason so many people do shit on the Marvel movies is because so many more people do see them.
Yes.
You need to get 50 million eyes on something so that 1 million people can hate it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And it's fine for those 1 million
to hate.
You
don't get to that level of hate without having a even bigger level of love.
Some would say you don't get to 500 million friends without making a few enemies.
Ooh.
That is the tagline for The Social Network.
The movie that changed my life.
Yes. Got it tattooed on my back.
you know what's cooler than a million dollars? Like, if Demi, this is long, dude.
Correct. Read all of it. Interior, dining hall, yeah. Evening.
It's a screen.
Sean
it's-
Parker, parentheses, Justin Timberlake, walks in.
It's full final draft.
It's fucking Aaron Sorkin notes on
error.
It.
I, going back to Black Panther for a second, I wanted Tiff to see, my wife to come see Black Panther with me in the movies. I was so hyped for it. And she goes, I don't know. I don't really like comic book movies. She got burned out early on comic book movies. And I'm like, hold on. Watch this Black Panther trailer with me. The first one that dropped. And was she was like, wow, that looks really cool.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, now watch this movie called Civil War with me. I'll give you the backstory that gets you to Civil War. And so like, as we're watching, I'm like, they hate each other. This is happening. This is happening. And then she, cause like, she liked Black Panther. So she liked Chadwick Boseman so much and thought he was so cool. So he shows up in that movie and she's like, this is, and then she's like, I can't wait to see Black
Panther. He's great in that movie too.
He's so good at it. He's so good as, he doesn't get enough credit cause RDJ gets, his Stark is, blows Iron Man out of the water.
Of course,
but I think a lot of things about Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther is his T'Challa, who's a character that you have to be so reserved and so even-tempered with, his T'Challa is so great.
I think that's why I love it. Like, when I saw Civil War, I loved that movie because the conflict is just so contained and it's like, the world is at stake. It's like, no, we're mad at each other for like a political reason.
Right.
And then him coming in and just being like, I'm mad because you've killed my father, but his whole thing was like, vengeance has consumed them. I will not let it consume me. I'm like, this is where Marvel should be going. You make a fucking giant movie, but you keep the stakes small. You make it like character pieces.
Right.
I love that.
Because I can't deal with how do you top Thanos?
Right. I don't want it to be like Mission Impossible, where it's like, it's just bigger and bigger things that they're not really topping because they're not doing the stunts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's just like, now 50 million things come from a hole in the sky rather than 40 million things.
Right.
And we all shoot our beams at it and it goes away.
Gotta get those beams in the sky.
Yeah. That shit bothers me about those Marvel movies where it's always like, because like when you think about the first Avengers where the hole opens up and everything's coming out.
Yeah.
Not the Skrull, the Kree or whatever. And then in Infinity War, then it's like they're coming to Wakanda in like the same exact way.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this feels repetitive.
And it is like, it's a spectacle. So you're just kind of like, yeah, they're just putting as many cool effects as you can in there. But then I feel very disconnected from it because it's like I'm just watching a painting and I'm not trying to follow a story.
Yeah. Anytime Cap is on screen just talking is like more exhilarating than...
And there was none of that in Infinity War. Every scene was like a fight or like a riff off. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. I don't love... Ben Rogers described it as a lot of Marvel movies use like... commercials level of humor.
Yeah.
Where it's like the sort of like trailing riffs that is like that Apatow brought us a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
But one of the bad things or one of the things that are now overused is the, okay, so that's how you're going to talk into a microphone?
Right. You know? It's like, that was a stupid thing. We're going to do a mic. I'm like, okay. No, you don't all have to be snarky. Like,
right.
I don't want to watch 20 Iron Mans.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing that, when you blow out these movies where it's like they're all snarky in their own individual movies, it's like when they all come together, let's layer how they all are with each other. Like I loved Doctor Strange and Iron Man. I just recently rewatched Infinity War. Mm-hmm. I love Doctor Strange and great place for rewatches, the plane.
Oh,
you know what
yes.
I mean? Where you're like, oh, it's a bummer to see this movie on a small screen, but I've already seen it on a big screen. So now I get a rewatch and I can, and if I miss something, it's fine.
As much as I love going to the theaters, I love watching emotional movies on planes because I am not much of a theater crier unless I'm like, I feel it coming. Then I'm like, let's embrace this. And I really have to like feel it or like get so into it that I'm not listening to other people going like, and then I'm just torn out of it. But like on a plane, it's so easy for me to cry because of the altitude.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I'll watch Ryan Reynolds Buried. I'll fucking watch Southpaw where it's like, if I ever saw this theater, I'd be like, whatever. But now I'm tearing
up. I fucking wept watching Million Dollar Arm on a plane, the John Hamm cricket movie.
Yeah.
I fucking bawled.
It's great.
I'm a big time crier, theater crier.
Oh, that's, yeah?
And I think it's my love of movies. I get caught up in it, but I think weed helps you get a little more in touch with that emotion. I'm easier to laugh, easier to cry. Did you see Eighth Grade? I'm assuming.
Yes. I cried in Eighth Grade. I saw it twice, both times.
I cried in Eighth Grade. Then we were walking out. My wife said, put your sunglasses on. Cause like I was obviously
sobbing.
I was like, literally, I didn't realize how much I had. And I was like, oh, okay. I put them on. And then I tried to say she's like, she's like, that was amazing. I'm like, I know. The part where she, and I could not get the words. I was literally like, the part where she, and I just opened up right again while I'm going to validate my partner. Like, I'm literally going like.
It felt like back-to-back scenes in eighth grade. I was like, I'm sad crying because it's just a sweet scene. And then I immediately was like crying. So it was the dad talk around the fire that made me cry.
Holy shit. And I'm a dead dad, major issues for the last 5 years type guy. So for me, that scene cracked me wide open.
So that and Call Me By Your Name, those two dad scenes, like every time I see both of them, I'm just like, this is beautiful. It's
that
so
Call
good.
Me By Your Name scene is fucking amazing.
Outstanding. And like, I really liked Call Me By Your Name, but I didn't feel as strongly about it as a lot of other people did. So I was like, I'm going to see it again. And I was like, it's not really grabbing me. And then the fucking Michael Stuhlbarg scene with the dad just brought me to tears. And that's another thing. Like when you are brought to tears in a theater and it's just this big thing and you just... Sometimes when I'm already crying, then I hear someone sniffling. I'm like, yeah, this is very powerful. But if I'm not there yet and then I hear it, it like takes me out.
Oh, interesting. There is something about like seeing eighth grade in the movie. This is a great example, is like cringe. Like you can feel the cringe of the theater. I'm getting chills talking about it right now. Literally, like you feel like people are like, like awkwardly laughing at the moments that are embarrassing. Sharing. It's the version of like looking at each other on the subway when one person's crazy. Yeah. Like you're like, wow, look at this guy. The movie theater experience for that is so fucking
it
fun.
I loved it so much. I guess when I was going into it, I was like, this is the kind of thing I could watch at home. I don't need the experience of a theater. But I went to the Arclight. I sat in the dome on that lower level. It's just enveloping my entire vision. And it's just, it's great. Everyone has the same emotions at the same time. And it's all like running at 1,000 paces. Like the laughs are great. The emotion is great. And
I think, seeing a movie in the theaters makes comedies better, you know, makes action sequences
everything,
better.
Like, your sense of, like, well, what do I think about it? Just falls away, and you just laugh when other people are laughing, and it makes everything better.
Right. Eighth grade, this is a spoiler for eighth grade. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it. But the part at the end where she's making the video, and she's like, hey, I'm so happy to hear you're done with high school. I hope it didn't suck for you, and if it did... I'm sorry.
And she's like, don't worry, because you'll have more days. When she says, I can't wait to be you, I literally was just like, I fucking like curled up and I was like, oh my God.
I lost my shit because in my mind, she's predicting that her next 4 years aren't going to be good either.
Yeah. And,
and
like,
that's
brutal. Fine.
And it's probably true.
Yeah.
And the way she says it, of just like, sorry, I know. And she's talking to herself. She's like, the next 4 years are going to be, I hope it's not too hard on you. Mm-hmm. Talking to herself. That's such fucking real heavy
duty
shit.
The ending of that
shit.
Movie is perfect. What I was going to say before is just that, I think I just got caught up. The dad scene made me cry. The scene with the chicken nuggets made me cry. Happy cry. It is my favorite scene of the entire year. Because it turns all of these feelings of awkwardness that have just been sad into like a bonding moment for these two characters, and it's just beautiful.
That
and I,
everyone's talking about the girl, the
Elsie Fisher.
She's so great.
Yeah,
that kid whose name is Jake Ryan, great name by the way. That kid is fucking stellar,
incredible. So good. That scene is just like did you know that the thing, the little dialogue they have about Rick and Morty was improvised? They were just talking about it on set and he's like, go do it. And it hit me so much. I'd never laughed so loud in a theater. I have never like immediately gone for laughing, like crying and like looking on these kids like, I want the best.
So
for
real.
Them.
Just the line of like, do you you like Rick and Morty? He's like, yeah. And then he does like a half-assed impression of it. I've never felt more connected to a character when he goes, Rick, okay, Morty. You know what I mean?
So like, that's I was like, what the fuck is happening? It felt like I was a kid again, and I just had all these feelings of like, yeah, that's when you realize that things are going to be okay. When you aren't like trying to hide your embarrassment, you are just like, we're both embarrassing, and that's awesome. Like, I love your embarrassing.
It is that version. Is anyone who's... unusual or had a rough go in junior high and high school, it's very common. But then you go to college or you go to a new town or you go somewhere or you find your tribe, and just two nerds like that, two like dorky awkward people meeting each other and just seeing like there's hundreds of thousands of people like you guys, yes, and you're gonna meet them all, and it's gonna be awesome. You know,
it gave me a feeling that I feel like I don't get from too many movies, where nearing the end of a movie, like, my brain's just kind of like, we've been here a while, when's this thing gonna end? Even right. if I'm loving it,
yeah.
When that scene hit, I was like, I will watch another hour of this. I need to see them flourish. I need to know that they are.
I want to watch Ninth Grade, where yes. they're dating, where they're long distance, go to two different schools.
You're the best of friends. I want you guys to talk on the phone and talk about what your day was like. Yeah. It was incredible.
I was so happy when he messaged her.
Yeah.
That I was, this is how into the movie and into her head I was. I was like, please don't reject him because he's not cool.
Yes.
And I was like, but that's a great character flaw for her to have, to be like, no, he's a dorky.
But it would have made it so depressing.
Right, exactly.
We needed her to get a win.
And when they got that, and it was just like, you felt the relief in the whole, I saw it like on a weeknight after it came out. So I think I saw it with the people who heard from their friends that it was amazing.
Yeah.
And we all, the moment, so I don't know which dipping sauce you like, so I got them all, I don't know. And then he has like the weird, he's like, is this stupid? I'm sorry. Is this out? Did I leave this yes. out? Oh, what is this? Oh, just because I shot a bunch of bullseyes.
He's
on
like,
the
I think it's cool. I think it's stupid. I was like, I've had this conversation. I think.
I know. And he like left it. Oh, it was like so real. And they were both so, and I was like, you could feel the collective hope of the yeah. audience.
That's yeah. another thing I love about movies like this that are just like slice of life movies that you see on a big screen, is it lets you know that all these things that you're like, oh, this is an embarrassing thing that I do. It's like, we all do this. Don't feel bad.
Right.
All of your experiences that you are ashamed of and embarrassed of are so universal that you'll see them in a movie and everyone will be like, oh yeah, that's me. And you're just like, but I thought it was me.
It's right.
Like,
nope. Hey, it's all of us.
It's
guys.
All of us. We're all fucking nerds.
So fucking cool.
And then, I mean, you were talking about it before, but the scene at the end where she's talking to herself, I love that also because it's not like most movies where they'll just be like, hey, she's different and things have gotten better for her. It's like, she's still as nervous and awful and like everything is
she's
still...
got a win. She's not necessarily winning yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And she just takes that win and it's just kind of like telling her future self, like, you're going to get another win. Don't let the losses get in the way of that. You're going to be fine. Yeah. And I was like, that's what everyone wants to hear.
That's the answer. That is the answer yeah. in life, is like, shit, you know, it's all going to work out. Just, it's going to be rocky at points. Damn. Just to lower the bar of the conversation completely, yeah. or the brow of it, rather.
Sure.
Do you have go-to snacks? Are you a movie theater snacker?
I am. And it changes per theater.
Really?
Yes.
This is the kind of fucking conversation.
This is the minutia.
This is the, now that I text you, I have your number, I'm going to text you about,
please.
Like, let's discuss, because the Arclight caramel corn, great, but I'm not a popcorn guy.
I don't like popcorn. It gets in my teeth. I worry about it, and I get the kernels in there while I'm focusing on the movie. I like a soda, but every so often I'm just like, it's like, I'm tired. I don't want something that's just going to make me crash.
Right. The big thing is, a lot of people treat themselves at the movies.
Yeah.
But if you are the type of person who goes to 3 movies a week, you're no longer allowed to
standard.
Treat yourself.
I feel like I'm going to, I feel like a movie reviewer, which like, I've got my prepared set and I'm just going to enjoy every movie by a set of standards, but like, I'm not. But I feel like my go-to snack for a place like the Pacific Theaters is Twizzlers and an Icy. That's been my go-to snack for years.
Oh, wow.
I love eating the Twizzlers, and then when the movie starts, I turn them into a straw. I always mix the Icy flavors, blue raspberry and cherry. No Coke. Don't need it. That's just soda.
Yeah. Get the red and blue is all you need.
Yeah.
The brown makes it always look like snow that fell off your car.
Exactly. I want it to look like a slushy.
I want it to look like magic. Yeah.
Yes. When I go to the Arclight, I'll do a soda and the Sour Patch watermelons, which I love because they're not so sour that I'm like puckering up and I can just sort of like get all the salt off there and then eat it. And like, I'll bite it in 3 pieces like a crazy person through the movie.
I don't really eat sweets or really snacky type food, but I love to eat while I watch movies.
Yeah.
My dream scenario is like savory meat. Like the iPick in Westwood is like a special treat because it costs you like $100 for a date there.
Right.
But that's my dream, is like fully reclined, eating a quesadilla, watching a movie.
Some of my best experiences of movies are like, I've already seen it. Let's go to a crazy theater. We're leaning back watching fucking Kong Skull Island.
Right, yeah.
And these giant recliners where there's only 12
maybe
seats.
Maybe I'm going to have a beer.
Yes, exactly. I love it.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I like to have a big beverage because I'm stoned. So often water because I'm trying to be healthier.
Yeah.
But then I have like, I love the Arclight sausage baguette is like surprisingly good. They have watermelon barbecue sauce and like a spicy mustard that you can, I got both sauces on there. It's like a big ass hot dog and it's a little higher quality.
How do you feel about hot foods at a theater?
I don't love the idea of it because I'm just like done by the time the trailers are over.
Same.
Like, cause you're like, I can't put my pretzel nuggets down and then pick them up. I just bought pretzel nuggets and nacho cheese to go see when I was seeing Fallout.
Yeah.
And it was in 40X and like the cheese is filled to the top. And I'm like,
just
I'm
shaking around? What was that about?
It's a bad idea.
Do you often see movies in 40X?
No, I've only seen it twice in my entire life.
I've gone once. It was to Doctor Strange. I hated it. And it was the second time I'd seen it. So I was just like, whatever. But I spent the entire time just messing with my girlfriend's chair because I was like, this is fun. And she's going to be like, why does this scene have a rumble? Oh, you're fucking with the chair.
But I saw Ready Player One in 4DX and I was like, I hate 4DX. And then my friends were seeing Fallout in 4DX and I was like, well, I'll go because that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And I would think as a stoner that 4DX would be the extra. Now it's a ride. What a great. And I still would prefer not to be in 4DX, but it was more Ready Player One than 4DX that ruined that movie experience for me.
Yeah.
So I like the chocolate covered almonds at the ArcLight too. That's my go to sweet because then it feels like I'm not being disgusting.
You're right because you're like, there's nuts there.
Yeah, but if I can, a movie theater cherry coke with no ice is just like a dream. But who has?
I'm a Barks root beer kind of guy.
Oh, Barks has bite. I burned myself. That's Barks was the off non coke non sprite drink in the soda fountains at MTV and VH1 when I was a PA and like. Early 2000s. So we got free soda and I didn't drink coffee. So I drank Barks out of a styrofoam cup like all day long for like 2 years. Right. And I was like, gained a bunch of weight and felt sick all the time. And I was like, I can't have Barks root beer anymore. I've ruined it for myself. But at the same time, I was like, maybe I shouldn't have soda at all.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
I feel like I don't drink soda until I'm at the movies.
Right. That's the only place I allow myself a cherry Coke, which is every. But then again, you can't have three a week. I can't.
No, I cannot. There are times, I think a lot of times I also just get no snacks when I'm at the movies, depending on how I'm feeling.
Right.
But the only time I ever
If I time it where I can do a movie after a meal, that's like the best.
That's
for
the
me.
Best.
Sitting down full and then maybe having a small dessert or just some water or just a bev.
There are times where I'm like, oh, I've planned to go see this movie at this time. I've already got the ticket, but I haven't eaten dinner yet. That's the only time I'll do hot food. And I'll just like try to finish it during the trailers. Because I'm like, I don't want to deal with
finally,
this.
Finally, I had a personal pan pizza for dinner as an adult man.
Got some chicken fingers and onion rings or whatever.
Well, the Grove, as now that you go there, you can bring any Grove food in.
Really?
I think so, or at least they don't care.
Oh, I'm bringing Chipotle. I'm kidding.
No joke, we brought fucking Umami Burger.
Really?
And the guy's like, can I search your bag? And Tiff has, my wife had a purse and a big Umami Burger bag, and she was like, opened up the purse, and he was like, good, can I see the other bag? Open up the other bag. Visible is two burgers, two orders of fries, and two bottles of water. And
they don't care.
All right. I think if you buy it in the Grove, because I walk in, Mike, here's a good morning movie situation for the Grove.
Yeah.
I'll go walk past that, the Bean and Leaf, and get a giant iced coffee, or my friends will get like the weird blended drinks. And just having a nice coffee while watching a movie works for me, dude.
I have a friend who will always bring coffee to movies. It helps that we like go to movies at like 11 p.m. She's like, I've got a coffee. I have never done it, but it seems like it'd be comforting.
If you like to sit and have a cup of coffee, might as well add a movie to it. Yeah.
Do you do morning movies a lot?
Yeah, I will, because it's like get it out of the way sort of thing. I don't have a day job. I'm not. So I have week. And also going to an 11 a.m. screening where parking at the Grove's easy or parking at the ArcLight's easy. Yeah.
I wasn't working for the last year and I would go to the Pacific Theaters in Glendale all the time. 10 a.m. early screening of the day. If I didn't like a movie, I'd be like, I can go see anything else right now. It's fine. I love coming out of the movie theater and it being like 12:40. I'm like, the day is still young.
Right.
I can do fucking anything.
You turn on your phone, you have four emails.
Yes.
You're like, yes, all right, now my day starts. Yeah, but it's stressful to go to movies. The movie time I don't like is the movie time that jumps, like, I don't like to see movies at 4 or 5 unless I have, like, dinner plans after.
Yeah.
Because I hate coming out of a movie and then it's, like, it's dark and I miss, like, the end of the work day and I don't know what's... I like either going to the movies or, like, a post-dinner meal. Post-dinner movie.
I feel like if I go to the movies and it's not before 4 p.m., then I'm just like, well, I'll just do it at 7 or later. Because then I'm like, you get that weird middle amount of crowd before 7.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes if it's, like... an opening Friday and I'm like going in the middle of the day, there will be no one there. I'm like, well, this feels like something I want to experience with people if it's opening weekend. So
right,
I'll
right.
7 p.m.
That is that drawback. But also another wonder of L.A. is the 2 p.m. Friday screening of a movie.
Sometimes
can
full.
Often be full.
Yeah.
Lot of
none of us have jobs.
Demi, thanks so much for coming on to
thank
talk about movies.
Dude,
I know.
To be talk.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't even.
I have so much to say. It's fine. I'll text you.
Yes, I'll text you. I'll give you all my fucking patterns, how I watch movies, where I smoke in the parking lot, I vape in the bathroom. I mean, yeah.
Vape in my car, go in. If I'm like, I'm not there yet, I'll go and like just do it through my sweater in the like little lobby leading up to the theater.
Oh, yeah. I'm constantly, my wife's like, I'm like one trailer is played and I'm like, oh, also, that's another thing. I'm a little older now and I like to drink beverages. I can only hold my piss for 2.5 hours.
Ooh.
So like any movie that's longer than that, I have to pee like right before the trailers.
I feel like movies have trained me to not need to pee for longer because I never need to pee during a movie.
Oh,
when it ends, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I do. But
I don't anymore because I'm diligent about, and now just, and I think it's like, partially an OCD thing. Like I pee before I leave that, before I get in the car anywhere now, because I get stuck in traffic. But like having to pee 2 hours into a movie, I'm like, no. Now I'm like, I'm getting taken out of this moment.
Right.
So like randomly I'll be during the first trailer, I'll just like look to my wife and I'll be like, I'll be right back. And I'll run into the bathroom and like pee 4 drops out of like panic.
Yeah.
Vape like 10 times in the stall. Yeah. Come out like fucking, oh, now I feel great.
Okay,
yeah.
I know we're wrapping up, but I do have 2 questions.
Sure.
One, how do you feel about trailers during a movie? Are you like, I avoid a lot of trailers. If it's a movie that is not a big one, I will go and wait in the lobby for the trailers.
Interesting. I used to be obsessed with trailers and would one day a week watch all the new trailers on
I
my computer.
Do that,
and I loved it, but I started to realize I'm seeing most movies. And when I go to the movies, there's trailers for all the movies I want. I don't need to find out about it online anymore. With Twitter, people are tweeting whatever movies are coming out. And now I'm trying to avoid trailers.
Avoiding trailers makes the movie so much better for me because when I see a trailer, I immediately theorize what each shot means.
And you kind of can. You know, it's like they're not, like we said, they're made for kids. You are a writer. You have watched hundreds of movies. You know when you see a movie, you're like, oh, that's a misdirection. He's actually going to be a bad guy by the end. Yeah, like, oh. And I've started trying to avoid trailers. I'll see them if they're at the movie I'm in, right? You know, because it's always like, if I'm going to see a tentpole movie, it's fun to see 4 tentpole trailers.
Exactly.
And a big crowd.
I allow myself for blockbusters also because they're playing everywhere. So I'm like, I've seen all of them already.
Right.
But I try to avoid them otherwise. Although there's a new trend that Marvel is slowly, slowly doing where they are editing the trailers to be tricks. And I want more people to do that. I want to be lied to in the marketing of a movie.
I think something I heard and I've been espousing on all podcasts in the last couple of months on Fallout is that they like left the helicopter chase out, like, you know, they left a lot of stuff out of the trailer completely
and out of the movie from things that were in the trailer,
right? And that's like the coolest thing you could do, I think. It's like, leave one set piece out of every trailer. I don't leave the coolest shit out of the trailer.
Please,
let's just
always
assume we trust you, Mission Impossible.
The first trailer for Looper didn't have anything past the first 30 minutes, and I think about that so often because I had no fucking clue what I was getting into, and it blew me away.
That's how I felt about Sorry to Bother You. I never knew what was gonna happen next.
Absolutely.
And I rarely am in a movie where I'm like, Sorry to Bother You really doesn't let you guess what's gonna happen next.
And I loved that. I loved that because anytime something happens in a movie where I'm like, wait, we're 30 minutes in, I don't know what the fuck is happening anymore, it's wild card from there. I'm just along for the ride.
I'm so pumped at that point.
Do you see Hereditary?
Yes.
The trailer for Hereditary, such a mislead.
So smart.
Yes.
You think the girl, here's a spoiler, fuck it. You think the girl's going to be alive the whole time.
Right. Yeah. And then it happens so quickly, like, what the fuck? Wait, but she's the main,
and then you're
the
like,
poster.
Oh, she must come back as a ghost then. Nope. Like, that's literally what you,
exactly.
That's why she's so scary.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie, I think also more trailers should be mood pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the way Hereditary trailer was just sort of like, creepy vibe, here's some creepy imagery, enjoy.
Yes, I don't want to know story from a trailer. And I know that they cut them because most people who see the trailers need the story to know.
Right.
But like, which is why sometimes like I'll just watch the teaser. Because I'm like, I just want to see a few shots of what it looks like, and that's it.
I just want to see Michael B. Jordan in the Killmonger getup, and then I can get out
Let me see those goosebumps, baby.
Yeah. Trailers. Oh, I have a theory that I think Star Wars or Marvel should go like full J.J. Abrams and just drop, like, imagine one of them, a movie just comes out.
It would. There's an. They
like
should
Lemonade.
Do,
like
they
people
be,
will.
Yes, they should be Beyonce. We're gonna see it. We're gonna
Everyone's
see the fucking
gonna see
Star Wars.
Wars. If you don't, you can even say it's coming out on episode 9 comes out on Christmas. No trailer.
Yes, I would respect them so much if they did that. They never will.
They never will because it's just about pumping it for money. But that's why I love like 10 Cloverfield Lane kind of just like dropped and
the week before
that
was crazy. That was awesome. I loved that so much.
Yeah. I think more people should do that shit because
they have the clout.
People are going to come out and see those big budget movies.
Yeah.
Also, market the shit out of it after opening weekend.
Yes. Just you think you need to make 8 billboards on one intersection for Avengers Infinity War?
No. It's going to be fine. Yeah. You can imagine that Infinity War 2 is going to do around as good or slightly worse or slightly better than Infinity War 1, which is officially gangbusters.
Yes. They could shoot it on a DV camera like starting tomorrow and I think it'd still be like a guaranteed billion.
Right. And without showing a trailer, you could be like, come check out. And it could be...
Yeah.
I only saying this because we talked about being Nigerian earlier. If he showed me like trailers for Nigerian movies, like Nigerian action movies. Yeah, like Baby Police and shit. And I was dying laughing. And I just pictured when you were like, and Marvel just drops a movie and it is like clearly shot by like foreign entities.
Yeah, it's like Marvel presents Black Panther. Just like the weird sound
they
that's
do,
every
they
5
love
seconds.
That flash sound effect.
Yes. And, just like someone screaming, their eyes go black.
Thanos just snapping over
yes.
and over and
I'd
over
I'd be like,
again.
Whoa, that's crazy. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay, wait. So that was your first question about trailers.
My second question, do you ever leave movies? Because you're like, I'm not liking this. I'll leave.
Never.
I
will always finish the movie.
I have only left movies twice in my life. And the Avengers, I was like, okay, so I went to the Avengers a second time and then I got too high and I was like, this is fucking crazy. I don't like this at all. So I just left. Because I think when I get high for movies, sometimes it all just feels, if it's like a very like big budget CGI movie, it feels very plastic.
Yes.
And the first
suffocating
time,
in a way.
The first time I ever left a movie was Lemon, because I was just like an hour in. I was like, didn't like this at all.
Is that the Gelman?
It's like, I felt bad leaving, but I was also just like, I can't, I'm wasting my time. I'm
can't
sorry.
Can't attach to something.
Yeah. And then the other time was just this weekend. I went to see the Meg for a friend's birthday, got a little high. 20 minutes in, I was like, this is all plastic. This is all fake. They don't give a shit about this movie. This is terrible. No one in this theater is liking it. I left.
Oh, that's so funny. Cause I'm the opposite. Like I'll enjoy the Meg more if I'm high. Cause I'm like, oh, this is so dumb. Now I am, you know, yeah. Like, oh, that's so weird.
The crowd was so psyched through the trailers that I was like, everyone's going to yell. It's going to be so fun. I'm going to love this. And then they were silent for 20 minutes, even as action and jokes were happening. I was like, oh, this is going to be grueling. So I just left.
Oh, yeah. For some people, and I get that as someone who smokes all the time, I know the feeling of like you start to focus in on something more than you normally would. Yep. And it's like whether it's the good feeling of something or the bad feeling or like it's really quiet. No one's laughing. Mm-hmm. I feel I'm embarrassed for the actor in this moment.
Yeah. That's hard. Really fun.
I have a hard time. I think I walked out of one movie when I was younger, but I was like a group of 12-year-olds. We went to go see like Lightning Jack, the fucking Crocodile Dundee, like Western movie starring Paul Hogan or whatever. That's like, I don't. Yeah, I would have walked out of Ready Player One. Here's the thing. I'm a completist. My wife could make me leave movies, but she also has the ability to fall asleep anywhere.
Yeah.
And Ready Player One in 4DX is a very unusual thing where I wasn't enjoying myself. She wasn't enjoying herself, but she couldn't fall asleep because the chair is moving and you're getting sprayed with water and shit. She's like,
sprayed with water?
Yeah. The one in LA Live has a water spray
thing.
Oh,
God.
Yeah.
Mine was just the chair. I got to experience the new 4DX.
This one is like literally like a ride. It's like up in the air and moves and
okay,
rumbles.
Now I want to see that for Fast and Furious.
I'll go with you to go see Fast
Let's
and Furious in 40. Yeah. And then me, you, and Griffin can do a follow-up because Griffin has been on exclusively talking about Fast and the Furious, this podcast, a handful of times.
Yeah.
Where he espouses all his strong family theories.
Oh, I have to hear that episode then, or those episodes.
Yeah. I think you would, of course you would dig it.
Yes.
It's an overanalyzation of a stupid movie.
Yeah.
Seems right in your wheelhouse.
Absolutely.
Well, Demi, this has been a fucking great chat.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your HeadGum podcast, Punch Up the Jam. Is very funny.
Yeah,
very
thank
fun
you.
Show.
We take songs, popular songs that you know, and talk about the lyrics and the music and why they're crazier than you think they are. We theorize about them. And then at the end of every episode, we rewrite the song, do like a parody of it.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's very fun.
And it is. seems like a lot of work.
It's less work than you'd think. I think just because we're in the swing of it, but also because it's a thing I've been doing for years
like,
now.
It's like, yeah, remaking parody song. Or yeah. Parody is not even the right word for what you do. Is like sound alike.
Yeah, sort of. I'm the guy that they hire when the band says no.
Yeah, right. But check out that podcast. And you're, what are you on Twitter?
I'm at Electrolemon.
Oh, right. I knew yes. that. And do you have anything else you want to plug?
I am going to be at the XOXO Festival in Portland, September 6th through 9th. I don't know what day I'm performing, but I'll be doing like half a talk, half like a joke presentation. So that'll be fun. Yeah. It's like a thing that I've sort of done in a few places in LA, but like I'm going to go all out.
What's XOXO?
It's like a festival of like people who make their living and are like creative through the internet, and they just are having like panels and different like game makers come and do weird things
fun.
In like a festival.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, it should be fun. I've never been, but I'm excited.
I want to see this presentation.
Yeah, it's very fun.
So check that out if you're in Portland or nearby. Yeah. And I'm at Gabrus on all social media. Tweet at us. Your movie snacks, your movie rituals. I'm always curious to hear what that is. Listen to Action Boys, listen to Raised by TV, and listen to Punch Up the Jam.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Demi. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.